From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Claire Strimple with a quick look at your local and statewide news. The number of large cruise ship passengers arriving in Juneau this summer was down about 90% from an average year. And even though it's not as much as it usually is, the city still has some revenue from the per-person tax it collects from cruise ship passengers. As KTOO's Bridget Dowd reports, city officials are trying to determine how to spend those dollars.
Juneau gets money from cruise passengers through a variety of state and local fees.
The reason we do this is cruise ships are different than other businesses in town.
That's city manager Rory Watt, who says the city is asking for public input on how it should spend funds from its $5 per person marine passenger fee.
If you took that cruise ship and you said instead of a multi-thousand passenger ship, it was actually a hotel. The hotel was full every day of the summer and people came in and out. We charge the hotel property tax. We don't charge the ship's property tax, so we have this different process.
Over the course of a normal summer, Juneau sees about 1.2 million large cruise ship passengers. This year, with tourism and the cruise industry still reeling from the pandemic, only about 125,000 of those people made it to the city. That means revenue from passenger fees is still down almost 90% from an average summer. And due to a court settlement with the cruise industry a few years ago, there are some limits on how that money can be spent. But Watt says it's usually used for a mix of services and infrastructure projects.
We open up seasonal restrooms and we hire crossing guards and we pay for visitor information services that coordinates a bunch of volunteers and we produce maps and signage, you know, so people can find where they're going.
Once people submit their ideas, Watt will draft a recommended list of projects. Then there will be a 30-day public comment period before it moves on to Juneau's Assembly for final approval. City departments and members of the public have until January 3rd to submit their proposals. In Juneau, I'm Bridget Dowd.
50 years ago this month, Congress passed one of the most monumental bills in Alaska history. The Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, or ANCSA, was an important break from the past, doing away with the Lower 48's reservation system. Since then, Alaska Natives have leveraged the deal into highly profitable businesses. But there's no denying the settlement also came at a huge cost of lost land. For the first story in a series, Alaska Public Media's Nat Herz traveled to the oil-rich North Slope to hear from residents grappling with ANCSA's legacy.
I'm on a driving tour of Utqiagvik, America's northernmost town, with Kion Harcharek, who's cruising his truck past houses and businesses. But history is literally just below the surface here, too.
So this mound right here, in the early 80s, there was a huge storm that took off half this mound, and there was a frozen family found. So this was an old sod home, and I'll show you many other ones.
The Inupiat have occupied the region for thousands of years, and Harcharek says settlements once dotted the Arctic Ocean coastline all around what's now Utqiagvik. Residents lived off the land and water, hunting whales and caribou. But that relationship has changed deeply, and today the Inupiat don't own the same lands anymore. Instead, Utqiagvik and other North Slope communities are surrounded mostly by land managed by the federal government, much of it for oil production. As an avid hunter and trapper, Harcharek is especially frustrated by how the land around his hometown is designated as the National Petroleum Reserve.
Without any conversation to any of us, you got this petroleum reserve that affects, you know, over two-thirds of the communities here. It's prime hunting lands, prime waterfowl habitat, wetlands.
There is, however, something of a flip side to all this. In the big building we walk into after getting out of Harcharek's truck.
How's it going?
Good, good. Did you see it the last time?
I've never been up here. This
never
is my first
here. Welcome.
Trip.
This is Crawford Puckatuck, chair of the board of Arctic Slope Regional Corporation, showing me the company's richly decorated boardroom, where a replica skin whaling boat sits on the floor under the conference table. Here in Alaska's northernmost community, at the edge of the Arctic Ocean, is the headquarters of the biggest business in the entire state, one whose portfolio includes two oil refineries, a construction business, and one of the North Slope's only hotels. Puckatuck's company reported more than $3 billion in revenue last year and paid its 13,000 indigenous owners dividends as high as $4,000 a person.
How have we done so far? We've been blessed.
We've been truly blessed.
These two perspectives, Pukatuk's gratitude for the corporate wealth and Harcharak's frustration about land, they may sound really different, but the tension between them actually flows from exactly the same place and the same time, 50 years ago this month.
I appreciate this opportunity to extend my greetings and best wishes to the Convention of the Alaska Federation of Natives.
That was President Richard Nixon announcing he'd just signed the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. The landmark bill had two major elements. First, it created a dozen Native-owned regional corporations like ASRC and dozens more at the village level, and it seeded them with $1 billion. Second, it set aside 44 million acres of Alaska land for the corporations, which sounds like a lot until you realize it's just 10% of the state. Harcharak does not see this as a great deal, since Native people had to give up claims to huge areas they once used and were also forced into a corporate system.
This capitalist system, right, was imposed on us in a colonistic way, right? Either you're gonna do it this way or you're not gonna do it at all. And you're gonna conform to this or you're not gonna do it at all, right? It got us what we have today. But it's a drop in the bucket on, you know, the indigenous people of Alaska.
The debate over the legislation was especially charged on the North Slope, since billions of barrels of oil were at stake and ultimately were lost. 50 years on, residents still have complex feelings about how they see the settlement bill. Native leaders from that era stressed the importance of understanding what they were up against. Oliver Levitt is an elder and board member of ASRC who spent time in Washington, D.C. during the land claims era. Here's how he describes attitudes from members of Congress then.
Well, half the people in my state are poor too. What gives you the right to claim things? They just didn't give a damn about you. To them, you're a savage. Excuse my Eskimo, but damn.
The Native land claims movement arose in the 1960s after Alaska was granted statehood and started claiming its own lands from the federal government. Native people found themselves in new competition for fish and game harvests on their ancestral lands. But facing attitudes like these in Congress, the movement didn't get very far until 1968.
Oil at Alaska's North Slope at Prudhoe Bay, a lot of it. Possibly the biggest discovery in history.
The oil industry's huge find at Prudhoe Bay had national importance, but Native land claims stood in the way of construction of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, which created a powerful incentive for Congress to act. Ron Birch was chief of staff to Ted Stevens, one of Alaska's U.S. senators at the time.
People really could care less about the Alaska Natives, but senators and congressmen out of Texas and Oklahoma and Louisiana cared a lot about big oil.
Those senators and congressmen got what they wanted. The land claims were resolved, and the pipeline still pumps $35 million of oil a day off the North Slope. The takeaway for Native activists was much more mixed, but today they stressed that they were working in a difficult political environment with few resources. At one point, their main group, the Alaska Federation of Natives, had $9 in the bank, and one man mortgaged his house to fund his participation. Willie Hensley, a Federation co-founder, said at a recent Alaska Historical Society remembrance that the 10% of ancestral lands and the $1 billion for the new Native corporations was the best they could do.
You'd think that there would have been celebration, but there wasn't. We knew what we were giving up.
The deal was a painful concession and simultaneously one of the most progressive ever struck between the U.S. government and its Native people. The North Slope's representatives to AFN voted against it and had to accept elements they opposed, like one that requires each Native corporation to share most of their oil and other resource revenue with the other corporations. But North Slope residents quickly moved to maximize what they got by forming the North Slope Borough, which today leverages hundreds of millions of dollars in yearly property taxes on the oil industry into services and infrastructure envied across the rest of rural Alaska. Pukatuk, the ASRC chairman and a borough assembly member, describes the Inupiat as playing a good game of poker after being dealt a bad hand.
Maybe we started with a couple of deuces. You know, I mean, look at the challenge that we had to face. Look at what mountains we had to climb. Look at the valleys we've had to endure. And we're still here. We ain't going anywhere.
It's hard to overstate what Alaska Native people gave up in the settlement, but they've also built some of their corporations into economic forces. In Anchorage, I'm Nat Herz.
You're listening to KTOO.